You're listening to Stealing from Wizards, Volume 2, Burglary, by R.A. Consul. Chapter 27, Chasing Memories. Kuro woke with a paw being jammed up his nose. He didn't know whether familiars needed to sleep, but his at least put on a good show. It was laid out on its side with its tongue hanging out, leaving a spot of drool on his bedding. It was also, apparently, dreaming. It pawed the air and kicked out as it navigated whatever it was that magical replicas of raccoons dreamed about. Kuro wiped the drowsiness out of his eyes and rolled out of bed. He had no idea what time it was, but he guessed it was quite early since Arthur hadn't stirred. Or maybe they had just kept him up too far past his usual bedtime. Kuro dressed and wandered out to see if breakfast was ready. When he found the dining hall already bustling, he dashed back to wake Arthur, who would be mortified at oversleeping. Arthur was extremely hard to rouse. When he finally yielded to Kuro's urgings, he had difficulty assembling his face. His eyes kept drifting and his jaw wouldn't stay straight.
"Are you okay?" asked Kuro.
"What time is it?" replied Arthur as he nearly fell out of his upper bunk. "When did Charlie and Marie leave?" Arthur was clearly not well. He knew there was no way to tell time accurately in the lodge, and he had been awake when the girls left. Also, Arthur never got out of bed with an unstable face. He tried to put on his tie before his shirt and couldn't remember why there was a raccoon in the room. Kuro helped him get dressed and walked him out to the hall to get help, but not before coaxing the sleeping familiars into his book bag and slinging it over his shoulder. He didn't need them escaping while he was trying to help Arthur. As they left their room, they ran into Magnus Singh, leaving his. He was similarly befuddled. He had a toothbrush in hand, but was just standing in the dormitory hallway, scratching at a bug bite on the inside of his elbow and looking lost. Kuro's worry redoubled when he found Catherine Hammersmith helping one of the first years out of the girls' dorms. Soon, every senior student in the lodge was helping to get the juniors out of bed. Every single first and second year student was bleary and confused, everyone except Kuro. Rather than bringing them to the nurse, old Pete sent one of the Luton, Ingot, to ask him to come to them. Ingot returned a few moments later to let them know that the nurse was already busy at another residence. He couldn't go inside, but some students told him the same thing had happened there. Kuro started to worry less about his friends and more about himself. He went to check on Marie and Charlie, who were being led out to the lounge by Meredith. Marie was a bit dopey, but Charlie was a mess. She couldn't get her limbs coordinated, and Meredith was almost carrying her.
"This is worse than getting memories back after summer break," commented Marie as she clambered onto a sofa.
Jennifer Tanaka dozily agreed as she fought to stay awake and rubbed absently at the crook of her arm.
"Does anyone else's mouth taste like frogs and electricity?" asked Sean Cassidy.
Those comments in isolation might not have caught Kuro's notice, but right next to each other, they triggered a memory. Or rather, they triggered a lack of memory. Kuro had been a regular assistant in the creation of, and a test subject for, Phineas's potions. He was familiar with these after effects. It was an anesthetic. Just a couple of drops would knock someone out for hours and have them forget anything that happened around that time. Phineas had found it useful if he ever needed to have Kuro root through someone else's possessions while they were still home. Kuro would sneak in, add it to a drink, and wait for them to fall asleep. Once they were unconscious, he could loot with impunity. Kuro even knew how to make it. The only ingredient not easily available in the alchemy lab was luminous slime mold, which is what gave the distinctive sparks and slime flavor, and Kuro knew where to get loads of that. In the fretting over all the delirious young students, nobody had yet noticed that Kuro was the only one of his classmates who hadn't been affected. Kuro didn't know how long that would last. He had to figure out what had happened before attention turned to him. He was less worried about a false accusation and more concerned that they might be right. He didn't know what he had done or how or why he had done it, but he couldn't help but conclude that he was to blame. This had Phineas's fingerprints all over it. And Phineas didn't do his own dirty work. Kuro tried to remember something from the night after he'd gone to bed, but it was a blank. He'd slept soundly. He almost never slept soundly. There was always a nightmare or a sound that woke him with a start.
A good night's sleep just made him more suspicious of himself. He tried to work out what could possibly have happened, but he needed his friend's help. He needed Arthur's notes, Charlie's imagination, and Marie's cleverness. He gathered them, but they were so dopey that they weren't of much use. When Kuro suggested that he might be to blame, Charlie responded with a yawn and asked,
"Why did you do it?"
"I don't know," said Kuro. "Probably to steal something?" Marie shook her head to dismiss the idea, and then regretted the vigorous motion.
"What would you want to steal from everybody all at once? It doesn't make any sense."
"Attend to the details," insisted Arthur. "We should inspect the scene of the crime." Getting all four of them into the girls' room was a bit of an ordeal. Kuro had to support Charlie while guiding Arthur along. Upon arrival, Charlie flopped into her bed and promptly fell asleep.
"Okay, Marie, is anything missing?"
Marie dutifully went through her possessions. Despite her sleepiness, she was quite convinced that nothing of value was gone.
"Unless they took some socks, I think everything is here."
"We should inspect the bed for clues," said Arthur.
"You are not inspecting my bed," replied Marie with finality.
Charlie was less resistant to the idea, but also impeded progress by refusing to leave her bed for the inspection. While Arthur tried to search for stray hairs or unexplained bits of lint around Charlie's uncooperative limbs, Kuro's attention was drawn to Marie's arm. She was scratching at her elbow inattentively, and a small red spot had appeared on her shirt.
"You're bleeding," he said.
Marie looked down and was surprised to find he was correct. She rolled up her sleeve to find a small red dot with a little bruise around it. Kuro recalled seeing Magnus with the same mark. Quickly, the others checked their arms and found they each had a matching wound. It looked like a bug bite. If Kuro didn't know better, he would have thought it was. But he'd seen marks like that, in that location, before. That was the kind of mark left by needles. Kuro had seen them on some people in Detritus who had gotten hooked on potions like Bliss and Contentment, and on his own when Phineas had taken Kuro's blood for tests and experiments.
"They injected us all with a drug?"
Marie was horrified, somehow thinking it was worse if it came from a needle than if she'd drunk it. Several pieces fell into place for Kuro.
"I don't think so," he said. "I think the anesthetic was so you wouldn't wake up from the needle."
"What was the needle for?"
she asked.
"Did they drug us twice?"
Maybe for drawing blood," proposed Kuro.
"What would they want all that blood for?"
"Oh, lots of things," said Kuro. "Tests, potions, spells. You can do really personalized magic with someone's blood."
That failed to comfort Marie at all.
"You must be a really sneaky burglar," said Charlie.
She'd rolled so her head hung off the edge of her bed.
"How did you get into everybody's room in one night?"
Kuro hesitated to admit what he could do to his friends. It was his escape plan if things turned out badly, but they were his friends. And if he did have to escape, it didn't matter who knew. They wouldn't be able to follow him.
"I can sort of blink," he said. "The Luton thing, I mean."
"Cool," said Charlie, flopping over to get a better view. "Since when?"
"Just a little while," he said. "And I'm not very good at it."
"I thought Mr. Widdershin said Luton could only go places they'd been before,"
said Charlie, astonishing everyone that she'd actually been listening in class.
"Have you been in everybody's bedroom?"
It was partly a question and partly an accusation.
"I don't think so," said Kuro. "Or I don't remember. Maybe that's what the burglaries before were for. Sneaking into a room so I could blink there later, and stealing things to make it look like a burglary. Maybe that's why my familiar knew where to find that stuff."
"You are working really hard to blame yourself, Kuro," said Marie. "But it doesn't make sense. Why would you break into a room and make a big mess, just so you could go back later? You didn't even know you would be able to blink."
Marie was right. Kuro was so worried that he was being controlled by Phineas that he hadn't been thinking clearly. He could barely blink at the best of times and only with Bindle's help. Even if he had been sneaking into rooms, it didn't make sense to tear up the bedding. Nothing about those burglaries made any sense. They might not be connected at all.
"Maybe it was your dragon fey the whole time,"
suggested Charlie, apparently having also forgotten much of the previous evening.
"I bet it got all the sneakiest, thiefy parts of you,
and can't stop stealing.
Arthur rescued Kuro with inconvenient facts. We established already that familiars cannot get in or out of residences. Like Luton and other fey creatures, it is impossible.
Oh, yeah,
said Charlie, still foggy.
No, it isn't, said Kuro.
He had a pair of familiars in his bag that had come into a residence. It was possible to smuggle salt into the fairy realm and gold out into the Blandlands if you knew how and had the right ingredients.
Luminous slime mold, carnivorous lichen, and grave moss, said Kuro.
He was met with blank stares. A terrible idea had just struck him. He grabbed one of Charlie's pillows and tried to tear it open. When he found he lacked the strength, he pulled out the dragon fey from his bag, which made short work of the fabric.
What are you doing? Demanded Marie, moving to protect her own pillows from Kuro's sudden destructive fit.
While a more robust experiment would have required him to dissect multiple pillows to be certain he got a representative sample, one was enough for Kuro's purposes. He took a feather and licked it, then put it in his mouth and sucked on it just to be sure. It was all but tasteless. The feathers that had coated Evelyn's room after her burglary had been bitter and salty.
What if?
Kuro started, finding pieces to the puzzle that he hadn't recognized as being part of the same picture.
The burglaries weren't to steal anything at all. What if they were to sneak something in?
The shifting gazes of his friends demanded more explanation for why he was rambling about moss and mold with a mouthful of pillow filling.
Fey creatures can't get in or out of residences because of the salt-laid spricks. If someone wanted to get one in, they'd need to smuggle it through the barrier.
That's impossible, said Arthur.
Lots of things are impossible unless you know how they're done, argued Kuro. I can get a familiar in with just my bag. You can get salt in from the Blandlands and other stuff out that shouldn't go. If you knew the recipe, I bet you could get a Luton into a residence room, hidden in a pillow filled with feathers and fused with a magical field-disrupting formula.
He realized he was starting to sound like Phineas and his stomach turned.
That's a bit of a stretch, Kuro, said Marie, trying to calm him and bring him back from his wild speculation and growing agitation.
A lutin wouldn't even fit in a pillow.
A very small one would, though. A small lutin who knew where to find the kind of materials needed to smuggle gold through the veil. A small lutin who was forbidden from interacting with wizards and had never eaten chocolate. A small lutin who had just gotten Kuro to let his familiar tour the lodge before returning all of his experiences to its owner.
I need to go, said Kuro, and ran out of the room, leaving his addled and baffled friends without an explanation.
He ran past the lounge, filled with concerned seniors trying to manage their slowly recovering younger students, through the nearly empty dining hall, and invaded the kitchen. His presence caused a wave of discomfort to wash over the lutin working there. Kuro hadn't even tried to talk to one of them in months, not since Bindle had told him they thought him a monster.
I'm sorry, but I have an important question, Kuro said.
The lutin fell silent and backed away from him, but their reluctance to blink away while Kuro was looking kept them pinned in the room.
Where do the young lutin stay on Avalon? He asked.
The lutin trapped in the kitchen traded looks of concern and confusion before one step forward to brave the conversation with Kuro. It was Ingot, a veteran lodge lutin, the one who had helped rescue him from Phineas the year before.
There are no Luton children on Avalon, he said. Why would you ask that?
That was the answer Kuro had feared.
I think I've been replaced, he said.
It was a notion that had been assembling itself, and with it a terror that he would have to do something about it. Bindle had obligations that kept him hidden from others, busy with unexplained activities and promises that he could not break, just as Kuro had. Phineas was a very smart man, but he wasn't very creative. If he'd been denied Kuro, it was just like him to replace his lost possession with the next best thing. It was a stretch, as Marie might say, but if there was even a chance that Bindle was under Phineas's thumb, he had to save him. He had promised.
Do you know someone named Bindle?
The lutin did. The tenor of the silence in the kitchen changed. They moved from fearfully refusing to talk to Kuro to angrily lacking the words to do so. Ingot was again the only one to speak to Kuro.
How do you know that name?
I've met him, Kuro said. Here on Avalon, a bunch. We're friends, sort of.
Liar!
One of the other Luton shrieked.
Bindle is gone. He was taken by wizards more than a dozen years ago. There is nothing that would stop a Luton from coming home if he were alive.
What about a promise? Kuro asked.
What do you know of promises, wizard?
Accused another Luton who had appeared behind him. Kuro whirled to find that the part of the kitchen he hadn't been looking at had filled with more Luton. Some he recognized, but more he didn't.
Half wizard, Kuro said. I've made a couple of promises, real ones. Blood and names and truth. They feel a lot like the magic that made me follow orders.
Kuro couldn't say much more, but he looked to Ingot, hoping he would understand what Kuro meant. He did. He shifted from suspicious to serious.
Where? He asked. Where did you see him?
Mostly in the graveyard, replied Kuro.
He reached out his hand to Ingot.
I'll show you.
Ingot warily took his hand and Kuro closed his eyes. He forgot about the smells and sounds of where he was. He focused on the feel of the small hand in his and remembered where he needed to be. The mausoleum behind him. Two tombstones to his left and a fallen statue to his right. The sensation of sleet stinging his face pulled him back from his imaginings. He was there, in the graveyard, with Ingot still holding his hand and looking very upset with him.
How did you do that?
Bindle showed me, Kuro replied.
I guess we can stop avoiding you then, replied Ingot.
What do you mean? Asked Kuro.
Sir Talon asked us to avoid interacting with you. He was worried that you could learn to do Luton magic, and that would cause problems.
Kuro was equal parts comforted and annoyed. Dubois was interfering without explaining himself, as per usual, but at least it was his fault and not Kuro's.
You don't think I'm a monster?
Less than most wizards are, replied Ingot. Now, where did you see Bindle?
Kuro gestured around vaguely.
Here, he said. We met here a lot.
He then called out for Bindle a few times. But that would not have worked even under normal circumstances. Bindle wasn't there, and Kuro had no way to make him appear. Ingot, on the other hand, was distracted by a mark in the ground.
You're really telling the truth, he said, as he stared at a tiny imprint of Bindle's shoe in the mud near the mausoleum.
Yeah, said Kuro.
Why did you wait so long to tell us? Asked Ingot.
There was a deep sadness in his voice, a desperation to find a lost child.
Why now?
I didn't know, said Kuro, apologizing for his blindness. I didn't even consider it until this morning when... I think Bindle's the burglar. I think he's the one that drugged everyone. I'm worried that it's all done now and he's not coming back.
Missing for so long, and just as we find him, he's lost again, said Ingot, tracing the outline of the footprint delicately with one of his small fingers.
I'm surprised that you all remember him after 12 years, said Kuro.
Ingot stared into the distance for a moment, and Kuro noticed his fingers twitching in turn as if he were counting.
Nearly 16, he said. There are not so many of us that we would forget a stolen child. He was taken as an infant before he could escape on his own. We searched everywhere and demanded the wizards do the same. There was never any sign of him.
Despite the tragedy of the situation, Kuro couldn't help but be surprised.
He didn't seem 16, he said.
We do not all grow so fast as wizards, said Ingot. No matter. Thank you for telling us, Kuro. Maybe you are right and he will not return, but we will wait and watch and begin our search again. There may be no way to find him, but now we know to look. There is a chance.
There might be a way to find him, said Kuro.
Ingot shook his head.
A Luton cannot be followed, even by another Luton.
I mean, I have another way.
He opened his bag and looked for the dragon fey inside. It was happily munching on a pile of candy. The drawer that Kuro had hidden Bindle's sweets in had been breached by the raccoon, and the two were gorging themselves on the remains. Kuro scowled at his own familiar as he wrestled the dragon fey away from the candy. He suffered some nips and scratches of protest as he brought the creature out of his bag, but it could have done much worse if it wanted.
How will your familiar help? Asked Ingot,
who moved to a safe distance from the very pointy monster.
It's not mine, admitted Kuro. It's Bindle's.
That is impossible, replied Ingot. Familiars are wizard magic.
It's only impossible if you don't know how to do it, said Kuro. We figured it out together.
Ingot was skeptical, but the possibility of finding a lost child was enough for him to entertain the idea.
How will this help?
If you pop a familiar, the memories go back to the owner, explained Kuro. I don't know how far away that can work, but we could try.
Do it, said Ingot. Please.
Kuro explained the plan to the familiar. He didn't know if it could understand him, but he felt bad just killing it without an explanation and apology. Whether it understood or not was unclear, but it settled itself on a tombstone. Kuro found a rock and hefted it over the little dragon fay. He cursed at it for looking so alive. It fussed and cleaned its joints with its fangs. It might also be the last memento of his strange little friend, something that had been entrusted to him to care for when Bindle was pulled back into the clutches of his master. Ingot had no such patience. He took a rock and brought it down on the dragon fay, whose exterior burst like a balloon, releasing the spiritual energies inside. As they had during the unsummoning, the condensed memories shot through Kuro's mind before flying towards Bindle. They zipped off through the forest, a swirl of glistening black, like ink pouring from a well. It went in a straight line directly across the winter landscape, ignoring trees and rocks and hills. Kuro sped after it, gathering every bit of wind he could to push him forward and keep pace with the small stream of black. Ingot did not run. Rather, he blinked from hill to hill and tree to tree. They shouted guidance to each other as they lost and found the streak of memories repeatedly. Kuro kept better track of it in the thickest underbrush, where he could keep close to it, even though the pine boughs slapped him and stung through his clothes. Ingot was a better lookout, able to spot where it re-emerged after plunging into a hill. The snow slowed and tired Kuro. It was waist-deep in places, and he had to leap and bound over it to keep pace. Even with all the help the wind could offer, it was exhausting work, and the memories showed no signs of finding a resting place. Kuro realized that, in their haste, he hadn't thought about the possibility of Bindle being 1,000 miles away. A Luton could be anywhere instantly. They could follow it to the Vale at the edge of the island at the very least. He didn't know what would happen there, whether it could pass across like a Luton or be trapped. Regardless, they would have a direction to go. That was something. Winter faded to spring, and the inky streak showed no sign of slowing. Kuro followed through ferns and fens and flowers, covered in mud, soaked in sweat and melted snow, with the gale-force wind being the only thing holding him up and keeping him going. He ran until the chase came to an abrupt end. A little way behind the amphitheater, where school assemblies were held, was a small iron door. It was easy to miss and unremarkable. The entrance to the cells that prisoners had been held in for execution in the days before Avalon was a school. Kuro had visited it once in his tour of historic places on the island and had found it filled with unremarkable things. Servants' uniforms, laundry equipment, coffee makers, and stores of alchemy supplies. At the time, he'd dismissed it, just a space claimed by the servants to do the dull work of school maintenance. Now, as memories crashed against an invisible barrier just outside the door and skidded around it like water splashed on a too-hot pan, Kuro reconsidered his initial evaluation.
What is it? What's going on? Asked Ingot, appearing beside Kuro and watching the memories dance about, trying to find a way in.
They can't get through the door, said Kuro.
There is no door. There is only dirt, said Ingot, but then realized his mistake. Salt bricks.
Kuro nodded. It would make sense that a prison would have protections against fey creatures and magic. Probably more than the residences. To a Luton, it would be like a gap in the world. They'd just see the far side where the protections ended.
How can Bindle be in there? Asked Ingot. A Luton could not cross through.
I think it's possible to smuggle one across, said Kuro. I think that's what the burglaries were about.
We should get McCutcheon, said Ingot. She will know how to get in.
Kuro shook his head.
I think Bindle will run if he sees another wizard. He might not if it's just me. I'll go and try to talk to him.
What if Phineas is in there with him? Suggested Ingot. Can you stand up to that man?
Kuro's heart skipped a couple of beats just considering it.
No, he said. But I can hide and run from him.
Is the door not locked?
Kuro shrugged. He retrieved what he needed from his bag and corrected that problem. He pulled the door open with a delicate touch of a lifelong thief, slid past the swirl of memories still trying to break through the invisible barrier created by the salt bricks, and crept into the darkened stairway beyond.
Thank you for listening to Stealing from Wizards. If you liked our show, please consider rating or reviewing on iTunes. If you want to support this podcast or just can't wait for the next chapter, the full book is available on Amazon, Kobo, and Indigo. Our theme music was written by Camille Saint-Saëns, transcribed by Franz Liszt, performed by Rebecca Verdun, and used with permission. This episode was produced by Jim Tigwell.